Hey, hey, hey.
Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. And today I have with me your other host, Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
Hi, Carl. Happy 2017.
Oh, wow. It's a thrilling, exciting new year. It's like we're living in the future.
We are. And you know why I'm so happy, even though like people think that 2017 should be a bad whatever, whatever. You know what? All that goes away with the Expanse season 2 premiere. Like
it does help things, I admit. It does improve things a bit, yes.
Oh my God. So we talked about Expanse like maybe once last year, but this year we're going to be on top of things and knock on wood. And we're going to talk about Expanse fresh off of yesterday was the premiere Wednesday. Today is Thursday. We're on top of it. And we're going to talk about that two-part premiere. And this is the way you extend an episode and not mess around. Not have people driving around in a van for different places.
Wow. I don't even know what you're referencing right now.
Not a clue. Nothing with zombies in it you thinking of?
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. I have no idea.
All right. So The Expanse just kind of came out of nowhere last year to me. I saw maybe a trailer for it and I was just like, oh, new space show. Bleh. I watched it. Wasn't thrilled about it when I saw it. And then I was contacted by maybe writers or directors on Twitter said, hey, you watched the wrong one. Rewatch this one. I think Eric had something to do with that too. Rewatched it. I saw this glorious space show that I just absolutely fell in love with. Didn't I have to get you on board, Carl? Or were you there before me? I think I did have to beg you.
I don't think I had a lot of problems. I just think you saw it before I did is all. I was getting to it, but it was not high on the queue. And then we finally got synced up. So it was,
Right.
Good time.
So another thing I think that kept me from reviewing it earlier is that I kind of held out on watching it because I wanted to save it up to have it, to have new episodes. So when it premiered, I wouldn't have to wait as long.
I think that's what was going on. Yep. Because I know there was some kind of delay, and it wasn't that I wasn't interested in the show. It was like a strategic pause and I can't remember why. But anyway,
I didn't want to wait a whole year for it because those first few episodes I fell in love with, and I was like, if I watch them all now, then I'm gonna have to go a whole 6 months without The Expanse, and I don't know how I'm going to live my life.
Yeah, that was crazy. I watched them all on broadcast time. But anyway, we'll get back to that.
That's fine. So, I mean, I don't know where to jump in exactly, Carl. I mean, I could just start throwing things out there, but I think maybe you're a bit more measured. I'm, like, excited beyond measure. I am a yappy dog.
Okay, all right.
Look, I will hump a leg right now. I'm so excited.
Oh, wow. That's some enthusiasm.
Yeah, I shouldn't be talking right now.
All right, let me start with one thing about The Expanse that I thought was a little strange. When the series first premiered, and this is a trend that I guess they have continued, as beautiful as it was and excited as I was to finally get back into space on a sci-fi program, there was this thing about The Expanse, this thing where it was like, they were a little rough introducing characters. Now, I don't exactly know how to put this or how to explain this, but the unveiling and the introduction of nearly every character on The Expanse in the beginning, I was not real excited about. And I don't know how to say it. I don't know what it was. It just really took a while for me to get on board with the character. Now, I'm not saying they weren't well developed. I'm not saying that they aren't interesting in their own right. I'm not saying that, you know, that they didn't spend the time to develop them. But I think so much about what I like about the characters in The Expanse came over time and came as I got to know who the people were and what their place were in the broader role of the series.
Can I dip in just for one moment why you may not? Because they never actually really revealed who the main characters were. Like, people were just dying off left and right. People that we, you know, like, okay, I know that face from somewhere. And then, boom, that person would die. And we never, like, when you hear of an ensemble cast, I guess maybe that's what this would be. And we didn't know who was going to be recurring, who was going to be coming back. We didn't really, you know, get the crew of the starship. So
there's definitely some of that, because man, Expanse don't play. People were dropping dead. You know, let's still get back to our guy who got hit with the metal fragment in season one right away. You know, we had a feeling he was going to be around. No, he wasn't around.
Nope.
So I'll give you that. They are not playing on the Expanse. People will get pinched out in a second. Maybe it does have something to do with a fear of getting attached to anybody. But even our guy Thomas Jane, you know, he's one of our guys, right? He's one of our guys. There are these characters or these actors that we see in stuff, and we keep wanting them to be in the right role, and we just keep wanting them to find a place for themselves. Well, this is finally something that allows us to see this guy in a role that is interesting and well developed, and we can get behind him on this one. This is
well,
good.
I think Punisher was good. I liked him in Punisher. I don't know what anybody else saying, but I liked him in the Punisher films. And then after that, he did like show after like the Vice movie with Bruce Willis. That was terrible, and like maybe some other thing, Hung, which I was just like, oh, whatever. But
just say, even as fans of Thomas Jane, you know, unsung fans of Thomas Jane, it still took a while for us to get behind him on this, or at least for me to get behind. So I think it might be a part of it is what you're saying, that it was hard to figure out who you were behind on this show. But I don't know. Well, okay, so I'm saying that to say, and I'm leading into, Right off the bat, our first episode in the new season here, we see the Martian Marines here, right? Is that what's going on with these guys? The Martian Marines.
And I would like to point out that our boy Tommy from Defiance is one of those Marines. Did you notice him?
I'm glad he's got a job. Welcome back. Yeah. Welcome back.
Go ahead. Marines.
It's good. So I'm just gonna say that our exposure to the Marines, no matter, admittedly, the scene was pretty cool, and the scene was very cool. I like the outfits, I like the Mars setting, I like the whole gung-ho-ness of it all. It was very cool. But I just gotta say that our introduction to our first Space Marine, what was her name?
Draper.
She seemed a little much. This is all I'm saying is the introduction of all characters on The Expanse always seem just a little much. They're just a little over the top. And this is how every
was a bit much, Carl.
Oh boy. Well, I mean, it's just. Okay, so you want to understand the motivations of the characters. You want to say, okay, what's motivating this person? Because obviously she's very passionate about, you know, her position and defending Mars, and we got to go get them. And it seems like it's turned to about 11.5. You know, if you just held it at 7, I'd be all right. But see, I'm not singling her out here. I really am not. My point is, this is exactly how I felt about every single other character. It's always been like they come out all huge, and you're like, oh, this is very, very much here. And so I know it's going to dial that, but I'm just trying to figure out, you know, because we've gotten to know the other character.
Arm wrestling a robot with no head.
I'm just saying, ordinarily, this would be a sign of, you know, something that's a little too much. But this is how every one of the other characters. And see, it's because we've gotten used to the old guard that maybe if you go back and watch it, they all have these cartoony introductions where there was just two, you know, there's the explosion in the background and, you know, take that. And rockets are coming out of her butt. It was just too much. It was too much. That's how everyone on the Expanse is that's how we get to know what drives these people is they've always got to have the over the top introductions, and so, you know, that so I'm just reminding you this is bringing back what's happening. But with that to be said, it clearly means that there's something is going to be awesome, and she's going to be part of a value team, and it's going to be very important to me, and I'm going to like her eventually. But this is how it feels in the beginning with the Expanse. Always these characters.
So glad that. Well, see, I had a tiny niggle of a problem with her, not all as right. huge as yours. In fact, I thought this was going to be Asian Jessup all over again, and you would be in love with her, and you'd be like wanting to braid her hair and buy her rings, and I thought I would have to listen to this over and over.
I'm very selective. I don't spread my love around to just any woman. Come on now, come on. Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
Okay, whatever, Carl. I just really thought I was gonna get the whole.
I was digging a princess. I just want to put that on the record. I saw that. I knew that. But anyway, we're getting back. Focus. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean. But anyway, I just thought that I don't know. I thought she was a bit grumpy. She was a bit. Yeah. She was a lot to handle. But I was just like, okay, yeah, you know, because we have the lady on the ship, what's her name? The main Naomi, and she's softer and she has feelings. She's not afraid to show them, but she's still a badass at the same time. But then you gotta have your 7 of 9, your Starbuck. You know, you have to have your gung-ho chick, and I think she's the one. She's a really odd casting choice. I've never seen, I don't think, an actress like her before, like her, or whatever. What I like about her.
What do you mean when you say that
she's just very different. I've just never, she's just different all around. What's an actor that you can just kind of like,
Well, see, here's the thing, and I'm actually reinforcing the point you made earlier. The casting choice on The Expanse is odd everywhere. Seriously, all of these people, I probably would not have chosen if I was composing the series this way. I mean, these folks are not from Central Casting. I'm serious. They really are not, and so
I like
so,
that
you,
though.
You know, for you to go, well, she's just not. I mean, who is in this series?
Thomas Jane might be the only person.
And what they did with him? I mean, first of all, that crazy mop of hair on the hanging off the one side.
I love his hair. It because it's terrible. I love the terribleness of it.
But so, you know, admitting that if we were going to pick him out of Central Cast, even what they did with him seems as sort of an exaggerated bizarreness about it that makes him less like what you would expect. So yeah, nobody looks like who they ought to be. Come on, we got space Mormons. Who is like they're supposed to
that
be on this
so
show?
That's so weird to me. Like, how did they become so prominent, and they are the prominent religion, and they're like, we'll explain this better, because like right now I'm fumbling all over my words, but how are they the premier religious spiritual leaders of this future, that this near possible future that we are? That is fascinating to me. I love it. And then there's no polygamy jokes or whatever. Did they get rid of that? Is that still a thing? Like, what, or did it just transfer to the women? Because now, you remember when what's her face went to the planet and we learned about Holden, he grew up in a blended family where the woman had multiple husbands, and it was all the moon is a harsh mistress with the Robert Heinlein, you know, whatever. And I was just like, oh my god, what's happening with this show? I love it so much. So
Humans went everywhere. Yeah, well, then again, you know, Mormonism is probably one of the few religions that actually looked toward the future and, you know, had that whole kind of thing going on in it. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it was.
I feel like this is a thing. Mormons are always in the future for some reason, and it just fascinates me.
Well, they planned ahead and did well on this one. It's awesome.
Yeah, okay, so, I mean, okay. You lead the way because I'm all over the place. I'm sorry.
Yeah, lead the way. See, you see how I'm sort of going in order here? I'm just barely holding it together, but I'm sort of going in order in terms of, you know, starting out with our new characters and, okay, and in retrospective and dipping into our introduction to all the old characters.
Did you finish what you said with the Space Marines? Because I know I cut you off, and I'm sorry. So I wanted you to finish that thought.
I don't remember quite where I was going, but I just want to point out that the big introduction of our first character here, first new character, had that same bigness and kind of nuttiness that I have sensed out of all of the Expanse characters. And so they are simultaneously adhering to who they have always been, yet bringing us something new with the new season. So, hey, you know, excellent. Excellent. And of course, I kind of figured it might be a simulation. Between that and the dream at the very beginning of the episode, I was like, come on, guys. Come on. Come on.
So you thought that the Martians were a simulation?
I thought that that might have been a simulated battle scene at the beginning.
It wasn't, though, right?
I wasn't sure. What did you think?
It was like a training thing.
Right, right. But was it real?
Yeah.
It was real training?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, now, I mean, was it a real battle or not, is what I'm saying.
It was a training. It wasn't a battle. It was training.
But were they actually on, you know, like out there fighting stuff? Or was that a VR training?
No. They are on Mars. They are on the moon. They are in the belt. They are out there. That's why she's so pissed off, because Mars could have an atmosphere like a Total Recall. But they've been like putting things off to the side and like giving their funds to like help something else, and they can't afford to bring the atmosphere to Mars, and that's why she's pissed off. Because the thing that was fake is when she pulled up her heads up display and it overlaid the
future. That's Mars that they're on, though. That's Mars.
They're Martians. They were talking about Martians. They were talking about, I grew up on Mars, and something about his bones, and you know, one of the guy's parents or something owned people, or Tommy's parents.
Okay. All right. So what I was trying to figure. So okay, one that yes, they are on Mars. I wasn't sure if the firefight was real or not, or if that was a simulation on the surface of Mars. But okay, I'm thinking that it was
real training.
Real training, yeah. With actual. Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing is, yes, I agree that they are on Mars. At first, I was like, are they going to pull a Total Recall? Are they going to do something like that? But no, they're actually on Mars. But the issue, I think, with the terraforming is, with the lack of atmosphere, is because they couldn't invest in the atmosphere because they had to defend Mars. So that okay. All right. So, all right. Just getting clarity.
Okay.
On that.
Yeah. That's. I tried to explain it, but I couldn't really. Okay. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. So if we get things wrong, we saw it last night once.
Well, twice.
I saw one and a half, so I didn't get to finish my second viewing. But whatever.
That's all right. That's all right. So that was beautiful. That was very exciting. And, how do you want to do this? You want to try to go in order?
Let's try to go in order. I mean, are you playing in the background to kind of keep tabs or what?
I will now.
Oh, okay. So next we go back, to the ship. And wait, you know what I just want to say right now?
Mm-hmm.
The scopuli. Isn't that a wonderful word? Scopuli. I know, isn't that blown up or something right now? But I just want to just say scopuli for the rest of my life, because that is a beautiful name.
The names are pretty cool.
Africanus.
The names are pretty cool. Just across the, and I gotta admit, again, when I first heard them, didn't love them in the beginning, but they really grew. They've got a certain ring
man.
To them. They've got a realism. When you hear them, they feel real.
Somebody said Anubis, and it's supposed to be Anubis.
That's funny. That was funny. Yes, that was. Okay. I think that was Amos having a little problem there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was very cool.
Also, the last, our heroes, they were trying to, okay, so the first season is different than this premiere in that there was this mystery about an alien and nefarious means to uncover what's happening. Is it a being? Is it an experiment? We don't know. Thomas Jane Miller was supposed to find Julie Mao. Mao was killed by said being or whatever, and that her father was somehow controlling, like the alien, like aliens. It's like aliens, right?
Right. Okay.
And so, where we come in on the second season, it feels as if they kind of not totally backed away from that, but they've enhanced the political Game of Thrones-y type of, you know what I mean? Does that make any sense to you? Whereas before it was about this mystery and kind of about the horror and about the culture of everyone, whereas this premiere, I mean, this just could be the premiere and the next episode they're going to do something else. Totally, that's fine. But there's just so much to unpack. This is a terrible review. I'm sorry.
Well, it's hard to keep track of all of the stuff. I'm trying to follow you. I'm trying to stick with the episode.
I'm sorry, it is big.
It's a lot of stuff because, the political intrigue going on in the background, I think there's been a pretty decent mix of that all this time, because they started in the beginning focusing on these small stories and focusing on the individuals. You know, what's going on the station? Why is, you know, this detective so, you know, fascinated by this girl? All of these loose threads. And then toward the end of the season and the beginning of this first season, you know, the fun moment where we finally get to see Miller connect with the crew in the middle of that gunfight. I mean, you know, that what is the problem? What was that?
That was good.
Oh, yeah, okay, I thought you had a problem with it. You know, it was just, again, being able to appreciate, to effectively do crescendos in story arcs, too often this kind of stuff gets squandered. So for them to have taken the time to introduce us to these characters, for us to get to know each of these people, to understand why they're doing what they're doing, and then to bring it together in the middle of the gunfight the way they did. It was so much fun. It was so much fun and so well done. And of course, the importance of why these people are all coming together, focusing on one big thing. Oh, yeah,
because
you know.
They wanted to know why the camp was blown up. Then he wanted to know why Julie was missing. And so those leads brought them all together. Then what infectious alien organism, whatever, got on the base that they were on. It infected people. They got a chance before Miller and Holden got infected, a lethal dose of radiation. They were rescued and whisked away with the rest of the crew. And then that's kind of where we pick up after the Martian Marine scene.
That's right. Right. That's right.
And so the thing is, another thing I'd like to say is I really appreciate that they made them suffer from cancer. It's not that I wanted them to suffer, but I like
you
that.
didn't want it to be an injection and then everybody is fine.
Well, they it was essentially that it was an injection and everybody was fine, but they made us wait for it. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that's just part of what made the finale so exciting, because if your heroes are invulnerable and they're running around and nothing's hurting them, that's one thing. These guys are puking in every corner. They're coughing. They're limping around. There's no guarantee they were going to make it, really. I mean, you're just watching it. They're barely hanging on. So, to have them limping across the
finish
line.
Yeah, and when you get a fatal dose of radiation, they had a fix, but they have to have this triangle thing in their shoulder for the rest of their life, and they can't have kids. And I was like, you know what? That's a really good balance, or a really good way. You know, you can't just like, oh, we're just going to put the replicator on it, and then magic, boom, you're cured, like in Star Trek. It's like, oh, there's a cost. And so I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So they're trying to put things back together and figure out what's going on. They have been through some crap, and you could tell that it took a toll on them, not just physically, but emotionally. There is some there's some stress between the crew. They were not the well-oiled machine to start with, these guys. And now it is precarious. It is really precarious. And look, our guy Amos, I mean, that dude, he seems pretty scary. I mean, something very, very, very inhuman about him.
I don't know. I feel like he's just kind of, he's focused, I think.
Oh, focused, you say?
That's, so, what I'm saying is he is black and white. He is A and B. Either you're good or you're bad. There's no shades of gray with Amos. Either you're going to be civilized or it's going to be time to kick ass. Either you're on or you're off. And, I appreciate his loyalty to Naomi. I think he actually mishandled Miller's friend by just killing him. You can't take that back.
Oh, you think that was a slight mistake there?
I mean, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. The reason why he has Naomi, because he learned that about himself, that he doesn't have the shades of gray like a normal person does. He might be like, I mean, suffering from some sort of form of autism or something like that. And also another thing about Amos is people tend to say he looks big, but he's not. He seems just like a normal sized person.
Well, I didn't say he looked big. I just
because
said
people are always, oh, you're a thick neck, oh, you're a big hulking guy. And I'm just like, dude, you just kind of look normal like everyone else. I don't understand what's this imposing thing that people, you know, feel about him. He's no Christopher Hemsworth or anything. You know what I'm saying?
Well, when you've lived in the belt for a long time, maybe that's how, you know, people think. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe. But I know he's like rocking the guy liner pretty hardcore.
But anyway, needless to say,
I digress.
With Miller and Amos just chilling in the same metallic can, there are going to be some problems because Miller is a little high strung, and then you got Amos who just killed his buddy, just chilling with him right there in the ship there.
He kind of antagonized him a little bit. Amos did. He was just like, hey, yeah, you know, we got a thing between us. We kind of need to clear the air, you know? Yeah, let's talk about that thing. And then it's just like, maybe that wasn't the best way to.
Yeah. trust me, his tone is the least of our concerns in the situation. I don't think that is what pushed him over the edge. But anyway.
Well, it was a certain level of cluelessness, yes?
Okay, well, maybe that's... I'm just pointing out that there are some legitimate beefs going on here aboard this ship where there are some problems. I mean, the fact that they just made it out of, you know, radiation zombie land, you'd think that they'd be able to take a break or take a moment to breathe. And no, this the band has got problems. And that is the understatement.
Well, begin. I mean, they seem to patch it up. You got the cheese story, cheese farts.
Look, that came later, and I won't go so far as to say that patched things up. All right, the fact that they didn't immediately kill each other does not mean they're patching stuff up. But
I thought Amos should have gave Miller a free punch. You know what I mean? Like, he immediately is like, we got to square this and da-da-da-da-da. And he know Miller is, like, irradiated and old. So, well, he looks old. He's not actually old. But, you know what I'm saying? He looks really haggard right now. And so, you know, Miller cannot take him. So I felt like he should have did the gentlemanly thing and just let him have a couple of punches and then, you know, be done with it.
So you're not, again, we're expecting subtlety from Amos in this scenario. That's what we're talking about.
Right,
a little social grace. Is what you're trying to sell me on here?
That's fine. Never mind. I'm just gonna stop talking. You know.
Anyway, so all right, so we got our raggedy band limping out of the zombie radiation station here. They're making friends at this point, and then you know we can go back to. We can go back to, I guess, what is it, the UN headquarters or whatever, where we've got...
Oh, my God. Chris?
Okay, now look. Again, this balance is difficult. To try to put politics in sci-fi and make it interesting. That's always, again, you know, you want to start a sci-fi program on a trade war? Typically not a good idea. But again, somehow, The Expanse has made this sort of like a B5 level of world building and diplomacy and politics interesting going on in the background.
It works for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think they did a really, really good job. Even though, you know, we had that same, what is it, Queen Padme scene with Christian heading out to her vehicle. And all of a sudden, it explodes right in front of her.
You know, I just think they wanted to make sure that this premiere was really exciting.
I don't
because
mind.
There was just no reason why that just a random explosion like that.
Well, of course, there's a reason.
I know it was a reason, but
I thought it was exciting. You know, they just again, not that we hadn't seen that before, but they're just letting us know that she is in a very tenuous situation where she is.
I'm just saying they did not let up. I mean, people getting punched. I mean, we got a robot arm wrestle. We got all this stuff. Then there's an explosion. Mm-hmm. And then there's the trade discussion. And then you have like Captain Black Picard, who's like up in arms because he
Lucius.
Doesn't want to. Yeah, no.
The other guy.
Not Lucius yet. Yeah. But I'm gonna get to Lucius, boy. Fred okay. Wilson or whatever his name is, and but you know, I'm talking about the admiral or whatever he was in there. He was like, I will not stand for this sort of. I'm just like, oh my God, Black Picard is really got to stick up his ass.
Look, you know, as usual, the introduction of new characters on the show have to really let you know where they stand.
But then he quit.
Well, he was doing the moral thing. He was doing the moral thing.
They have morals in that room.
No, that's why he had to go, because there were no morals in that room. He did the right thing.
They were just trying to maneuver. They were trying to see what it was. It was a ship from the other side heading toward their ship, and their ship was on course for a base, and the ship had, you know, they had weapons ready, and then they thought that they were being fired upon when they weren't. Their ship was being fired upon. No, their ship wasn't being fired upon. They were fired upon the station, and they took the station out, and it happened to be their station. And so they was like, well, if they took out our station, we'll have to take out their station. But it was a lot of posturing.
Well, yes, but again, it does a good job of explaining what the stakes are going on here.
You're right.
And it also does a great job. I mean, besides her vehicle exploding, it's Christian, that's her name, right?
Yeah.
Our ambassador lady.
Yeah.
I forget how to pronounce her last name, but anyway, Christian. Not only does it show us how tenuous her political situation is, but it also shows us how important she is, because she's going to be pulling some strings in the background to try to, I assume, minimize the casualties of potential war here that's going on. It's hard to know exactly.
So is she a president?
Motivated.
Or, like, well, what is anybody here? I don't even know who anybody, like, what...
She's some kind of UN ambassador or whatever. It's hard.
You're right.
You know, it's hard to figure out, you know, what ranks are, you know, in these environments.
Because they're not wearing colors and uniform with pits.
The guys are, but you know, she comes in her floral, you know, kabuki wear, and it's hard to know exactly what that means for her. But But not only is the politics of this, the above board politics interesting, but the background stuff that's going on that we see her talking to the mother, quote, the mother of Holden, you know, talking to her out in the field. Now she is effectively recruiting our captain, you know, the guy who stepped down. We know she's going to be grabbing him up. The thing that she's building in the background, in the midst of all of this craziness, is really interesting. I mean, we don't know what the impact is going to be, but she knows exactly where the big players are, and she knows exactly where some of the most important, you know, pivot points and all of the stuff that's going on. And she is assembling a team that is going to be very, very, very important. So I liked her character. I hope they don't kill her with a piece of metal or some craziness like that. I hope she hangs in there, because what she's creating is very exciting to see.
I really want her to have a lozenge.
Okay, I think you should leave her alone. I think she has a lovely voice. Although I admit, it's the same feeling I had when I first heard Janeway. But this is, you know, you grow to love them. You grow to love them.
I already like her voice. I'm just teasing her.
But, it's very unique, very unique.
Yeah, no. So after that, now let's talk about Fred Johnson. Is it Johnson? Because it's so, like, John Doe. I mean, like, what is his name? Lucius?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Colonel Johnson, or Lucius Johnson, or whatever, the station guy.
Colonel Frederick Lucius Johnson. That name, right there?
That's all right. That's right. Well, see, you got to have all those names so you know he's important. I mean, this guy is sort of like a terrorist kingpin. He's a kingpin.
This is Chad Coleman. This is our Tyrese from The Walking Dead. He did right. He came on The Better Show, the show that I'm going to watch. And he just...
Definitely a promotion. Definitely a promotion.
Definitely a promotion. And he is crazy on this show.
Who is it, though? Everybody has got their own kind of, their own brand of crazy. Again, it's hard to find. I mean, who's the likable one on The Expanse? Really, you know, who is the straight up crystal clear hero on The Expanse? You're watching
Naomi.
Well, you know, she's nice, and she's got the only two people that sort of have a little moral fortitude, I guess. Or I'm not even gonna say moral fortitude. I'm just gonna say a little moral clarity would be Holden and Naomi.
Maybe Alex, the flight guy with the weird accent.
Yeah, what's up with that accent?
It just goes like to like so many places. It's like, what are you, this? Are you that? There's like another person who switches between accents too. I'm like, come on, dude. Okay, anyway.
Well, Alex is, he's always like chilling on the ship, so it's hard to know really what he's up to, you know, morally, what's going on. But the people who's had to have, you know, their feet to the fire.
No, yeah, I take him back either. I take him back, though.
You know, the people, you know, that we've seen really have to put their feet to the fire. You know, morality and good and bad is very fluid, because, again, even though I'm giving Holden, you know, the moral break here, problem is, and this is what, you know, Amos calls him on. He hasn't had to make the tough moral decisions. He always, when the moment comes, he's putting the gun down, but it's always at the expense of other people, or it's always he always backs out at that critical moment, and that is problematic. So, I mean, you can't say 100% anyone is a hero when you're watching The Expanse. It's always these shades of gray. And
I don't mind it.
What you mean the shades of gray, or you don't mind his pseudo morality?
No, I don't mind the shades of gray, because I think there were a lot of shows that came before that laid the groundwork that were uncomfortable to watch, not even fun to watch, Battlestar Galactica, that did the shades of gray thing, that did the darkness and the political intrigue. And I felt like all the shows that we've watched have been training us for The Expanse. You know what I mean? It feels to me right. It doesn't feel like it's trying to do too many things. It's not trying to be groundbreaking. It's not trying too hard to do anything except what it's trying to do, if you can follow that. I don't know. But here, it's hard to say that it's a dark show, because
it's only dark because the characters are gray.
Is that even dark anymore? Because like, look at how our society is now. I mean, is it dark or is it just realistic? Because there's this thing like recently, you know, like we've talked on Sci-Fi Party Line a lot of times, and every time we talk about darkness, there's always this conversation that come up about children and men. So I'd never seen it, and I saw it like for the first time like 2-3 weeks ago, and to me, it was not dark at all. It was actually pretty hopeful, and that's because I didn't watch it when everybody else watched it, because when we were living in a different place, you know what I mean, in time and with our society, to where when it first was revealed, it was dark. However, if that movie came out today, I don't think people would think it would be dark, because we have a different level of.
You know what I mean?
I
know what you're saying, and Children of Men feels more like a documentary now compared to some of the things that we've experienced based on society. All I'm going to say is, when I'm saying dark, I do mean relative to other sci-fi or other shows at the time, okay? I know what you're saying, but I mean, compare this to what classic Star Trek has been on TV.
But that was for a different era, though. I mean, you will never see anything that bright and hopeful and naive ever again.
I didn't mean actual original series Star Trek. I meant all the way up into our, you know, our DS9s and Next Generations.
Deep Space Nine, I'm doing a rewatch right now, and that's still like a little hokey in comparison to the things now. It's just like, wow, this is so bright and cheery by comparison.
Well, I think there's a place for that kind of bright and cheery sci-fi still. I don't think it's going to get progressively darker as time goes. I mean, the extremes will, but I do believe there's still room for a optimistic science fiction. But I'm just saying that, you know, when people are talking about that and when they're saying stuff is dark, it's not just about the mood of the program. It is also about the motivations of the characters. You know, when we look at what was going on in Galactica, part of what made everybody so gray, it was not just the morality, not just the sets where you couldn't see the space battles and whatnot, but no one seemed to be motivated by anything positive. They all seemed to be tired and reactive and selfish in a way that didn't make a lot of sense. You know, it was sort of a terminal selfishness. Yeah. When you're watching The Expanse, you see, you know, little bits of selfishness, but you still see flashes where it makes sense. You know, the selfishness, you can see flashes of people trying, even the worst people trying to do something at a particular moment that makes it. Like I said, I'm teasing, you know, Amos here, but in this first two episode premiere, he basically is the hero. You know, at one critical moment, you know, he pulls stuff together and saves everybody. So there are these moments where, on one hand, you see this, you know, moral ambiguity and you know, emotional sort of dread, but at the same time, there are these peaks of humanity, and you get to see it in nearly all of the characters, and certainly just a couple of episodes apart, you can see it swing one way or another for each of the people, and you know, it's exciting to watch, and it's I think it's. I agree with you when you said it's like the years of 10 years worth of sci-fi that we've been watching has been preparing us for The Expanse. I don't know if that means it took them this long to get the balance right, or I don't know what it is, but we can see so much of all of those old shows. We can clearly see Babylon 5 here. We can clearly see Galactica in this. Yep. There's space above and beyond in here.
Yes.
There's all of these things that we can very clearly point at. But it's like they finally got the balance right. They finally got the pieces in place that makes things interesting. And
do you think that perhaps maybe because it's less American-based that it might have this feel? Because you know what I mean, when something has an American edge to it, it has a certain cadence to it, whereas this one feels a little bit more international, more worldly. I mean, it's filmed in Ontario in Canada, which is now the refuge for the world, but
anyway, yes, we're going to do it. I'm going to say yes on that, primarily because, okay, you know, I'm big on story arcs. It took a long time for things to kind of get started with The Expanse.
Yeah.
They didn't just tell us exactly what was going on from the beginning, and they laid the breadcrumbs out for us. And so a little bit at a time, these stories came together. And again, you know, I've been on this rant before. Too often when shows have attempted to do this, we've had a couple of things. American shows either do it too slow and the show gets canceled before we get any resolution. You know, we're still missing the wall on Almost Human.
Just stop talking.
But there are so many examples where a modern American sci-fi show has tried to do something with this kind of depth. I mean, look, Firefly is another example where they had a broad idea of what needed to be done.
But, I mean, those are essentially Canadian too, because they were produced there.
I'm just saying the first thing is, one, how long it took for the story elements to come together in a powerful thing. It's not so American, or it's not so embraced by our modern American sci-fi culture to have that stuff take as long as it did, or to give it the respectful time that it takes to develop it. Two, the fact that the casting is so unusual, I think, also has to do a bit with that. That the people that have been placed in some of these roles, it's a very international crew, and we get to see folks in ways that we are not used, in America anyway, that we're not used to seeing folks. That's exciting, and that's an extra sort of a flair to the show that helps to break the stereotypes of what you expect these characters will be. So again, we're knocking down these traditional cadences and stereotypes that we are used to seeing with American shows. We are typically used to seeing, you know, a white guy as the hero of the show, and not necessarily saying that's not the case here, but like we also agreed that everyone is getting a chance to shine on the show. Each of these, there's no, you know, clear, definitive one guy who's the lead of all of this. And so to take the time to write respectfully for an ensemble cast versus just focusing on one guy and other people come in and out of his story is, again, a richer way to tell a story, and a better way to build the experience of a whole, you know, freaking universe. It's a better way to tell a story. So, yeah, none of these things is the traditional American sci-fi way of doing it. So, yeah, I think you're making a good point here that there's something decidedly, European, or at least not American, about how this is all coming together.
Not even European. How about just non-stereotypical?
Yeah, well, that's the best I can say. But yeah, that's the best I can say. Yeah. So that's fun. I mean, it really adds a certain richness, and it's hard to know where the heck things are going to go on the show. You can't just say, oh, I know where this is going to go next episode. This and this and this is going to happen. Assume you haven't read the books or whatnot.
No.
You know, it's really hard to know what's going to happen. So
I don't think that I'm going to read the books just yet. Mainly yet. Because I enjoy not knowing, and you know what I'm saying. I don't feel like every time I read a book before I watch, they're two separate things to me. And I just want to enjoy this story being told visually. And I like the way it's unfolding. Number two, there was a comment someone said on somewhere, maybe Twitter, Facebook or something, that this sci-fi show was really good because it was humans and how we created aliens in the mm-hmm. universe. So mm-hmm. we always have a science fiction show where we're humans and we go out in the universe and aliens are already there. Mm-hmm. However, what The Expanse is kind of showing us is how humans, yes, we go on the planet out of Earth and out into the universe, and how we evolve based on what we encounter. Like some people can't survive in gravity or whatever, so they're long elongated and they have very thin bones or whatever, and if they keep evolving or whatever, they're gonna look really different in 100 years. Mm-hmm. And so I think with this new proto species, whatever the thing has happened, I think humans did something somewhere and this thing evolved from us. I think that's where that's going. And I have never thought of us as the ones being the persons who created like the xenomorph or whatever. You just think that those people, they just come from somewhere else, and not that we accidentally like, oh, let's just put roaches on Jupiter and see what happens, and like 100 years later they come back and try to conquer us because we did something stupid, you know. And so I think it kind of puts a certain level, I don't know if I'm overthinking it or if they didn't have this intention or whatever, but it's just something that I heard someone say, and then I just kind of start thinking it over, and it's like, oh, that's really good, just something to mull over. Like, what if we did things and the universe becomes more diverse and populated because of us leaving Earth,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, so it's just well, a good look, idea. It's an interesting theory. I mean, again, you're being bold and trying to predict where this is going to go. And I just said, I have no idea.
No,
where
I don't. It was just a thought.
Another thing, I mean, yes, that is an interesting thing to consider. One of my concerns in the past has been when science fiction comes up with a show or a story and the enemy is us. You know, I kind of find that tiresome. And again, now I'm wary of that because look, Galactica, we built the Cylons in the modern incarnation of it. So, you know, and by the way, where's the AI in The Expanse? But anyway, we'll get back to that. So, when I see that, I'm like, oh, here we go. And our other hang on, let me get this other one in. You know, you said that it seems like we've been waiting, or we've been trained by other shows to get to this one, and we agree that this is the proper balance. Because I can think of right offhand another science fiction space program like a whole season, and there were no aliens whatsoever, and it was all about the people and the dynamics of the people one against the other. And it wasn't until the very end of the first season that we found out that there were even other aliens out there. Now,
What are you talking about? Because I feel like that's like almost every show ever you just described.
That is not every show ever. There's only one show that did that, and it was horrible.
What was it?
SGU.
I blocked that out.
You tried to block it, but I
did block it out.
But remember, seriously.
No, I don't remember there's any.
It's a delicate balance when you can have nearly an entire season of a space show, and there are no external, you know, quote, there are no aliens, there are no AIs. It's just about the people getting. And by the way, the stratification of the world and the people as they're evolving.
That's what Carl Breakout stratification of society is on.
You know what's going on? Isaac Asimov did this in his robot series, where there were spacers and there were people from planetary Earth that had the exact same thing. So the elements of this are very familiar. It It was wondrous to see the worlds that he had been writing about, because he'd written about an over-industrialized Earth and humans leaving and to go into space and not being able to come back for generations, and the toll it took on their bodies, the spacers, and the different, you know, economic impacts that had. And so it was really, really interesting. So to finally see this, I mean, it's really like living in one of Asimov's novels when we go through the Expanse world.
And we're not trying to take away anything
from
the writers.
No, I'm not saying it's bad.
We're not saying they're not original or anything. It's just that I feel like they really do a good homage to all of the things that come before, and they
it's
give it to us in a really great way.
It's the balance that makes it great. I mean, you know, we can tease this and talk about how we've seen these elements, as we often do in shows that we've seen. But what's the real hallmark is, can you make it, can you show it to us in a new way? Can you make it exciting and interesting?
Do you care about the characters? They can.
And the way they did this, I haven't seen it done this well. Seriously, it really is amazing to finally see all of these elements. They got the special effects. They got the crazy characters. The respectful military perspective, which we kind of saw in Galactica, and, you know, that's why I keep going back to Space Above and Beyond, where, you know, it's even a little in Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
When you think about those movies, that military backbone, it's like that is the strong persona of those series, you know, of those, the movies of, you cannot separate the military from Starship Troopers. You know, you can't, but to have the same level of respect and strength of that as just a thread in The Expanse. I mean, we step into the world of the military, and then we go right back into the world of a beat detective, and then we go right back into the removed world of espionage and politics. Each one of the bands that they step into is so well done and consistent and rich and believable, and at the same time, they manage to keep it interesting and to hold all this stuff together. It's really, really amazing. It's really amazing. And I mean, yet another thing that they do well here is something that I kind of, you know, get a little sensitive about. They make physics fun. I mean, the space battles. I mean, we're doing a miserable job of recapping these two episodes.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump into it. Yeah.
The space battles were beautiful. The first season
I think
I loved,
I had an orgasm.
This one, I swear to God, was just beautiful. I mean, not just the physics of the motion, the space ballet that you never see. You never, and when you're watching sci-fi, the ship's always moving away. That's cartoony or exaggerated.
Was there a shaky cam, Carl?
I'm not even talking about the crappy racking of the faux, you know, videoing that they did in Galactica. We could actually see the space battles in this, but I'm just talking about the designs of the ships that look like near technology, what's near technology possible. You know, they always had that, you know, bolted together erector set and blocky look about it, but they're still cool. They still make it look, but oh man, the battle, the strategic battle between the stealth ship, the station, and the Rossi was just so beautiful. And the puncture scene where you could see the spark holes, and they're just chilling. They're like, you know, we've blown the atmosphere out, so we don't have that traditional thing where a hole gets punched and people get sucked out. We're not going to be distracted by that. The punch scenes of the railgun weaponry going through the Rossi, and you could just see suspended in the air those arcs, I mean, those bands of sparks, and it was just so well done. I mean, for them to get all of that right is just unheard of.
I was beyond turned on by that. I'm sorry. That was that. If I smoked cigarettes, I think I would have had one last
night. You need one after that scene.
Yeah.
Because It just goes to show, you know, they made the physics sexy. You can do a real space battle obeying the laws of physics with ships that are, you know, doing, you know, thoughtful kinds of things. It's not didn't have to be a dogfight where one's chasing another. Those strafing runs back and forth, cradling up underneath the station. Aww. Hiding like that while they did the repair. Not that he was being chased through space and he's trying to rack that mess together. That was smart. You know, that's a good strategic thing to do. So it was just, I just, you know, more can be said, but the space battle was so well done.
God, it was really beautiful. So I wanted to talk to Carl about that last night. I was so super pumped after I saw that. But I've been thinking about it the whole day. I've been on the website because they have this little interactive thing that you can kind of look at the maps of the areas and all of the things that they have going on in the universe, sort of like a Game of Thrones map. Nice. But they have one on the sci-fi website, and it's beautiful. And I could just, this is a world that you can live in, walk around in, chill out. I mean, it feels like you can, and I know I've seen the beginnings of the Expanse at least three times, and I see something different every time because mm-hmm. it's so rich. I mean, we have characters that we still haven't even gotten back to, that they're just kind of, what happened to his partner who got impaled? You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? And we get new characters and all, it's just, and it doesn't feel like it's too much. You know what I'm saying? It feels like you're going on this journey and they're not boring you. And raw or something.
Here's the other thing, the payoffs. Too often we have seen shows like this try to do the arcs, try to give us multi-episode stories, and then when it finally comes to the resolution, or we're trying to get to the end of whatever it is that we've been waiting for, it's disappointing. They don't deliver on what it was that they had been building us up for. And you know me, I'm gun shy about that kind of stuff, because so many times that's happened when you're watching a show and you're like, oh, wow, this is leading to that and that's leading to that. Oh, I can't wait to see what happens. And then the quote crescendo is like,
balls.
Wah, wah. I don't like that. You know, I like some closure.
This man has just been abused.
It's true. And sci-fi is hard on a person. Sci-fi is hard on people. So initially, when I was watching the show, and they're asking us to trust them because something significant is going to happen in the future, I had the eyebrow arch. I was like, ah, oh, geez, here we go.
I think here people have commented in our discussion group, like, I don't know if I should get attached to blah, blah. I was like, these poor babies.
But saying that to say, once again, they have managed to deliver, which makes it a little bit easier to give them some rope when things are happening. If something is not entirely resolved on an episode of The Expanse, you can feel comfortable knowing that it's not just something they're going to let go, or it's not just something that they're just going to, you know, dodge and dip another direction and you're never going to see it again. The artistry of what makes the series really interesting is the little hints that they leave, the characters that we've seen in the past, do come back in a way that's meaningful and interesting. And oftentimes, even some of these background characters will pop up and have a meaningful return. So, saying that to say that...
Fred, let's talk about Fred. Let's talk about how Fred popping up. Because I feel like we haven't talked... So we find out that he is really a hero, kind of, because he's known as the Butcher because he slaughtered like a whole bunch of people or whatever, and it turns out he was given an order to do something, but then at the last minute, I guess the order was rescinded, but nobody told him, so he followed through with the orders, and then they threw him under the bus excuse me, and he never really called him out on it. He just went and lived his life and quit the Corps or whatever, and he just got a reputation for being like a terrorist or something like that. And he kind of owned it, because he'll like do weird stuff, and he, you know, rough and tumbles, and people are scared of him, and he throws people out of the airlock. Talking about physics now, though, Carl, when he
the fall, right? Yeah, I let him pass on that.
Well, so you know what though, the only thing that I can think of with the physics on that airlock scene is that they're on a station that has gravity, and so the gravity will be, it extends like.
I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm even going to say maybe it was the rotation.
That's what I was thinking. Like, it had to have been, because you just don't, like, just because you, if there was no thrust out of the airlock.
I saw that too. And I was like, hey, but given everything else, I'm letting the fall go.
I wonder
go.
What
I'm
Neil deGrasse Tyson would say. Because maybe we should ask him. Because
we didn't. You know, he gets very sensitive about these things.
But he'd have an answer.
Well, I don't believe that what occurred properly obeyed the laws of physics. So I don't think we need to bring Neil in on this. He would be very critical of what we just saw. So let's let it go. But yeah, that got me too. Like I said, but considering we just had the Rossi battle, I'm letting it go.
But then, like, you let it go because it was kind of comedic.
It was rough. But look, Carl Johnson was doing it. He was doing the warlord thing. I mean, that you want to keep people in order.
He turned his back on him, and I was just like, he did something with his eyes, and I was like, crap.
Because look, the dude had a gun tucked in the back of his belt, and so, you know, the normal warlordy thing would have been just to shoot him in the back and get on with the board meeting, but not our colonel. No, he got to flush him all bold right out of it. Knocked the dude down, so you got to get the big bully, you know, fist fight, knocked him down, threw him in the airlock, and then threw him out. Look, if you
slid him out of the airlock.
if you were hanging out with warlords and villains, and they're having a board meeting right in front of an airlock, it's like Dr. Evil and his trap door, right? You don't want to be talking bad about the Kingpin while standing on the trap door. No. You don't want to be. And another thing, Mr. Burns, I've had a problem with you. You don't do it. So there's villain etiquette for you. Don't do it.
Oh my God. So. I mean, what did we do with Fred Jones? I fear for his life, because I feel like they're gonna, like, somebody wants to kill him.
A lot of martyrdom.
But he's like in cahoots with our crew, and he's like almost part of the team in a weird way.
This is how all of the people have come together again. You know, this whole alien infection thing, for a variety of reasons, is bonding the multiple motivations of our people. It's very interesting how the different motivations of everybody seems to be coming together. Because I mean, look, everyone that we want to look at, we can start with Miller. Okay, Miller's involvement in all of this was just to try to find a little emotional peace. You know, is going on with him. Okay, remember his pursuit of trying to get to the bottom of the woman, of Julie's story. His whole he's trying to find emotional peace. He's living through this quote last case to try to bring him some. I don't know. It's like it's his Zen pursuit. I don't know how else to describe
it. I get that, but I'd like to also say that him falling in love with her in his pursuit didn't ring. That's the weakest part of the story to me, because it just didn't ring true to me. Well, I just did not feel like he even knew her remotely enough to have.
It's the projection. I mean, again, he sees her as this angel, really. And his
pursuit of that brought him this sort of emotional peace. And yeah,
I didn't feel like they made us feel that connection. Like if they agree. Just said it, okay.
I agree. All I'm saying is, yes, the romantic kind of love that you would have traditionally associated with where that should have gone, I didn't see that. But this is a guy that was kind of drowning and needed something to bring him solace. And a lot of times, you know, for good or for bad, a romance, even if it's not real, can center a person that way. So, you know, there's this old concept of like sky women, you know, that man is pursuing a woman that he will never be able to have. It's sort of like that night, I forget what it's called, but you know, when a knight is giving himself for the queen or for the princess, even though he knows he's never going to actually have her, but something about that brings him meaning. That's kind of what we're seeing. So anyway, all I'm saying is, that's kind of like what's going on. He's got this angel that sort of brought him back. But saying that to say, his connection to the alien stuff is only peripheral because he's missing his woman. You know, that's what's bringing him on that. Then, you know, we've got remember the Cant crew, who they're trying to figure out, well, you know, why would they have destroyed the base? What secret were they trying to hide? What's going on? Every one of these people's motivations, whether it was for, you know, for revenge, whether it was for knowledge, whether it was for romance or whatever, it all comes back to this core of this alien influence and how that's going to affect humanity. All of these things, and it's crazy. All these little pieces, all these little peripheral stories all come back to that in one way or another, and it's bringing over all of our people together in one way or another. So it's, I don't know, it's powerful. It's interesting. And, it's well done.
So with the alien thing, do you think it's alien, or do you think it's like bull crap that we pull, like humans?
I think it's alien because it being the MacGuffin is the treasure that everyone is trying to get. If it was of human origin, you know, why the chase? You know,
because
somebody,
it's a weapon.
But somebody would know the composition of the weapon already. You know, so they would be in a basement or in a bunker somewhere.
Well, maybe it like evolved out of the hands of, and now they rediscovered it. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I'm writing the story
well,
now.
So well, well, well that's possible. I'm just from what we've seen, it doesn't appear that that's the case. It would be simpler if it were actually alien. And I think, given the subtle balance that they have been able to create with this series, this actually being alien would open up a door of potential for where the series could go that is so much more interesting than if this is a leftover or a slightly evolved human weapon.
I disagree, because I think if it's a slightly evolved human anomaly, that it keeps it grounded in reality and doesn't take it to where how Battlestar Galactica ended with Starbuck being a weird angel. And
that
was the worst ending.
I'm not even getting into that. We're not even going to acknowledge that. I'm going to say
it happened. It was real.
But that's not where the Expanse is going. That's
why I would prefer, because aliens, it's fine. But if it's somehow human and then kind of got twisted some sort of way, I would like to be able to scientifically explain it and have it, yes, be a mystery, but still be alien in the sense that we don't understand it. Just be some like, oh, I pulled the alien out of my ass. You know,
I really think that the potential of understanding, assuming that this is truly alien, the potential of understanding what it can do to and for humanity by being alien is such an exciting, huge door that we could explore in future seasons that I think that is way bigger of a payoff. Way bigger of a payoff than if it happens to be.
I think it could be both though. Because if it's alien, then there's too much mumbo jumbo that can get involved, too many midichlorians that can get involved.
That's an example of when it's done poorly. It doesn't have to be that. Okay, so let's talk about the science, shall we, of what's going down?
Hey, my guest.
I'm going to believe that this is actually alien, and so we probably need to talk about the ending scenes of this premiere, which is the moment where finally we have broken into the anime brain cluster. Where you know all of the hackers are trying, their minds have been focused on decoding what this advanced bio sample is. By the way, I mean, so many things to discuss.
Come on, guys, don't kill the scientists.
There you go. I just want to point out the contrast because we have seen military precision and the powerful demonstration of what the organized military is like in the world of the Expanse. We saw that early in the first season where they crash onto that ship and they invade and do their thing, right? So we've got our FedEx can crew here.
Oh my God,
slammed on the side of the ship. And they bust in there and the crazy lack of organization that they have busting onto the station. You know, before they even gotten to the scientific, there was that whole, you know, nice shooting tech scene where they just unload on what was it, the gel gun campers that were hiding around a corner. So we never even get to see them. They were literally a smear by the time these guys got through with them.
I couldn't even determine if that was actually anything. Like, did they actually shoot at something, or did I miss it?
I'm assuming somebody was there, you know, with the gel gun. But when you've got Miller saying, "Hey, you guys need to hold it down a little. Can we just tame things down a little, please?" You know, when he is the voice of rationality, that is not your crack team of, you know, military elites descending on. So all right, so they bust in. I mean, again, never mind their mission goals. So is there like a ghost signal or whatever? Yeah, when the door blows up, that's the start of the mission. This is the raggediest team of guys. So all
and
right.
And then
so
one guy, he just kept talking and talking. Yeah, man, we're pumped up. Ha ha ha.
That was funny.
My God, I'm just like, what is happening right now? Miller's barfing.
And by the way, when you got a guy like that in a scene like that, by any other metric, that's just screaming red shirt. That's screaming red shirt.
I know.
We're back, old man. I got this. You know, he's just screaming red shirt. What do you got? So obviously, when he steps out and he gets the big red shot right in the head, it's classic. We're like, oh, he's gone. You know, of course he's gone. So for him to pop up after that, you know, look a little scared because he got shot with the non-lethal, you know, already we're what is going on? What is happening? So, all right. So, you know, we've got the team of hackers trying to decipher the biological samples, which is what's going on here. They're all plugged into their big supercomputer that they're trying to crack the code on. And of course, somebody unplugs the Oculus, and the scientists scientists and military guys are rarely a good combination. And that sketchy bunch just unloads on them for no good reason.
I mean, I'm just like, what in the world? They didn't have any weapons. They're just like, glah, glah, glah.
So they just unload on this team. And I'm sitting there going, oh,
knowledge is being lost here. That is a universal value.
But
it's okay. It's okay because these were just the worker guys. The head scientist has got his own VR room. You say, you know, naturally, Miller tiptoes around the back, and there's the Mighty Oz, and they're looking at his helix, and, you know, he says the code to lock up the sample as Miller enters, but I'm sure no one's got that. I'm just making that up. So he cuts in there, and finally, you know, we've got the head scientist in it, as all dastardly scientists do, is explaining 100% what he's been doing, what his evil plans are in front of the guys, because, of course, by explaining it enough, it's going to make total sense. Now, again, the scientific
You know what it felt like? He felt like he was Q explaining to Picard why he introduced humanity to the Borg. Right?
Well.
Come on, give it to me. Give it to me. I deciphered it.
I see the connection there. It's been done better in sci-fi than Q, because Q's excuse was lame. This guy tried to do a little better. I mean, he literally was rocking the V2 kind of explanation of what's going on here, which, again, you know, if you think about World War II and, you know, how we got, America got the rocketry program, it was the same kind of dynamic where there's just a mad scientist who's passionate about his work. He doesn't care how it's being applied, and he wants to, you know, he's just about the knowledge of it. And there's always a moral, you know, hiccup when it comes to that kind of stuff, because universal knowledge, it's critically important, it's valuable, but, you know, you don't have to inflict your science on an unsuspecting, you know, team of innocent people. There's a real problem with what he did there, and oftentimes that kind of morality is not addressed. And you could see it in that moment where the colonel, where Miller and Holden are all looking at him. And they're trying to decide, what are we going to do with this new power that we have? And Colonel, who is the master of power and control and opportunity, recognizes the value of what he has in that moment. He's like, you know what? You know, we can deal. We need to know where you got the data from, who you've been working with. Because you can see the gears turning in his mind of how he's going to be able to leverage that for his next move. You're looking at Holden there, who's sitting on the side, kind of like, I'm not sure what to do. Again, that moral paralysis that we've seen from him, it's hard to get
a way to put it, yeah.
It's time after time, that's what we've seen from him. And so it's really hard to get a gauge on what is really going on with him and what he's actually going to be able to do. So he's just, you know, looking around, guys, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Then Miller comes in from the side. Just blows him away. I mean, it was, and I mean, this is classic for Expanse, because you see the possibilities. You see a door that is so clear. You see an option that would make things a little bit better for everybody. You know, and somebody comes and stomps on it right at the last minute.
That was an American ending, right?
Well, there. I'm not so sure.
American. Just come take a shit on it.
I'm not so sure. But
I mean, not only did he shoot him, there was a pause, and then he shot him again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was very
hilarious
about his feelings about what was going on. And the colonel's like, dude, you know, you can just go, man, come on, really?
And then
really?
He couldn't even get mad at him either. He was like, yeah.
Well, everybody was on the fence is the problem. Everybody. Yeah. Was like, well, okay. Yeah, I mean, everybody was on the fence. The dude was unstable and he was scary and had done some atrocious things. So, yeah, no, you're not going to get a clear answer on that, but.
Well, shit, everybody was traumatized at the moment. People done got shot at. We didn't, scientists are going crazy. So, yeah, I don't know. That was a great way to recap that, Carl.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, that moment is pure Expanse. I mean, that's just kind of the fun that we're doing. Because seriously, if you back up and you look at that situation, there is no right or wrong answer for what or for how to handle it. There was only some kind of gray. There was no right or wrong answer for that scenario. And so I don't know. I don't know who would have been right. I don't know.
He would have betrayed them. He would have found a way to get out of it.
But again, you got to look at the stakes of what's going on here. I mean, literally, there are worlds on the brink of war and the potential of what this infection could do to humanity. There's a lot. You know, it's not just this. Yeah, even if he did go crazy or rebel or defect, at least they would have had the knowledge to sort of try to help people or to try to stop. So there's really, you just don't know. It was just, there was no answer to what went down here. And for them to just pick one, just pick one, it was visceral and fascinating. So.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah.
And it felt like it should have been overwhelming, and it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's again, they expertly balance all of these pieces. It's amazing to see. It's amazing to see. It's Expanse is really a triumph in modern sci-fi. I haven't seen anything like it, and it's exciting to be a part of it now and watching it episode by episode.
Oh my God, Carl.
Talk to about it, you know, and just to experience this live. It's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I figured out what's going to happen next. Well, not figured out, but I saw like the trailer for next week. And I forgot what's going to happen, but that's fine because we'll talk about it. But, I mean, That's pretty much it. I'm not sure it was a good recap. I'm not sure.
That was a horrible recap. I'm sorry.
I'm not sure if it was a review. I think we just talked about it.
Yeah. It was just so much. I mean, the folks that listen, you guys saw it. You know how awesome it was. Y'all saw it. Come
on. Y'all know. Why do we even have a podcast?
How in the world, you know, can you summarize all of that awesomeness? It was, there were so many moments and just little scenes. Like, okay, I mean, the cheese fart. Come on. You know, that was fun. Just that moment where the crew tries to bond. And the story and its effect on the crew, the crassness and the insanity of it, just that one little moment. It's peripheral to everything that we've seen in The Expanse. It's just a little side thing. But it was just
weird because Amos and Miller were really trying hard to get along. They were really putting forth work.
Yeah. But that was just a little moment where, at least, you know, Amos is like, all right, have a seat. You know, have a seat. And
he moved his tools for the man.
They had a moment. So, I mean, it's just, so how do you include moments like that in a summary of the two parts and you leave out a moment like that? But
you got the FedEx thing in.
And of course, we lost the whole container, which, you know, is a lot like FedEx. No, I'm just
nice.
You know, there's just so much where they just pinched out a whole slew of people. You know, once again, you don't know who's going to make it when you're watching The Expanse. So the stakes are real.
I hope Tommy don't die again.
Yeah, well,
you I'm know hoping. He died in Defiance. So.
I know. I'm hoping he hangs.
Oh my God. Okay. So we're going to wrap it up because we're just going to talk about little weird disparate things. But that was an excellent show. I'm this Westworld, a couple of other shows really giving me the quality sci-fi that I'm craving. That's a good thing. So that's our show. Give us your feedback.
We're sorry. That's all I can say.
Why are you apologizing? We did a great job.
That's the best we can do.
Oh, give us a call, 773-336-2686. Go to our website, leave us a comment at scifipartyline.com. You can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, email, whatever you got.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Bye.
End of line.